afternoon.
Afternoon.
Tuesday, May 18th. We have a public hearing that I am going to call. The Tompkins County Legislature holds a public hearing at 5:30 p.m. concerning proposed 2020 additions to the Tompkins County 2021 additions to the Tompkins County Agricultural District. Is there anyone here to speak to the public hearing? It is now open. Okay, seeing no one, I will close the public hearing and call to order the Tuesday, May 18, 2021 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call of members.
Leslie Shio.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Shauna Black.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Grossman.
Here.
What is wrong with this?
Henry Greenison. I don't see.
He's here.
It's John.
Here.
Jim. Here.
Please, I ask if you're not responding to please mute yourselves. Thank you.
Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corbin. Ann Corbin.
Oh, our mouth is moving, but we don't hear you. We don't hear you, Ann.
About now.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that.
Mike Lane.
Yes, I'm here.
Dave McKenna.
Here.
Glenn Morey.
Here.
Martha Robertson.
Here.
Leslie McBean Claiborne.
Present.
14 members present.
Thank you. Presentation of proclamations, petitions, communications, and notices. There are no proclamations tonight, but you would have received any communications and notices in the mail. We will have an executive session tonight for the purposes of discussing real estate negotiations or transactions. I have privilege of the floor for the public, but I want to do a little reshuffling as well. Let's go with privilege of the floor for the public. I have some names of people here who have asked to speak with us, and I'll call them in the order that they have been received, beginning with Joanna Green.
Thank you. Let's see. I am coming. There I am. Thank you, everybody. I submitted this also by email, but I will just read it to you. It's a statement of support for Tompkins County Legislators, Resolution Number 10133, the support for a single-payer approach to controlling health care costs and ensuring everyone is covered, and urging the New York State Senate and Assembly to enact the New York Health Act. Gives the numbers. So the Eastern Southern Tier Region Poor People's Campaign works on behalf of the tens of thousands of poor and low-wealth people who live in the rural, urban, and suburban communities of Broome, Chemung, Shenango, Steuben, Schuyler, Tioga, and Tompkins counties. We are part of the larger Poor People's Campaign, a national call for moral revival, along with nine other regional chapters representing most of New York State. The Poor People's Campaign holds health care as a human right and one of our central policy demands. After nearly more than a year of this global pandemic, it is clear that universal guaranteed health care is not only sound public health policy, but a necessity for a just economic recovery that centers racial and economic justice. With passage of the New York Health Act, New York State can lead the way towards universal health care in this country. The New York State Poor People's Campaign and its regional subgroups have been actively supporting the passage of the New York Health Act. It is essential that our representatives in Albany get the message loud and clear that New Yorkers want and need them to pass the bill this year. We urge all Tompkins County legislators to vote in support of Resolution 10133. Thank you for speaking out on this critically important issue for residents of Tompkins County and beyond. And it's extremely timely since the Health Committee is meeting tomorrow. And as far as I know, it's not on the agenda, and it needs to be put on the agenda. So we need to pressure them immediately. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks, Joanna. Judith Jones.
I'm here to watch. I'm to be a panelist, I guess, in case questions come up that I can answer.
Okay. Thank you, Judith. Tyler Collins. Not here. Okay. Vanessa Greenlee.
Yes, I'm here. Good afternoon, everyone. Good evening, rather.
Good evening.
My name is Vanessa Greenlee, and I'm running to represent the Enfield Newfield District on the Tompkins Legislature. On the legislature's agenda this evening is document 10133 that Joanna referenced, support for a single-payer approach to controlling health care costs and ensuring everyone is covered. If there's one thing that the pandemic has shown us, it's the interconnected nature of so many segments of our economy. This is perhaps most true when it comes to access to health care. Our food supply depends on worker health in processing plants. Medical treatments and banking services depend on healthy staff to keep offices open. Working families depend on childcare, and childcare depends on healthy providers and teachers. To keep the engine of our society humming along, we require that everyone have access to healthcare just the way everyone has access to the fire department, libraries, and schools. We know that the highly decentralized model of our current coverage system creates expense and waste while diminishing health outcomes. We've known for years and years. A universal single-payer model costs less, both for the government and for 90% of individuals. What about businesses? Instead of paying a per-employee premium, the businesses will pay a proportionally smaller amount to the state. When something is more efficient, effective, and costs less, it is fiscally conservative. In Tompkins County, we should exercise our leadership as a community and send a confirmed Resolution 10133 to the New York State Assembly and the New York State Senate, urging both chambers to enact the New York Health Act this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Susan Beckley.
Hi, I'm Susan Beckley. I am with the Finger Lakes chapter for New York Health along with Judy Jones. I am here as well to answer any questions. The latest update we have on the Health Committee meeting tomorrow at noon is that we don't know whether the New York Health Act has been placed back on the agenda. The State Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Stewart Cousins, pulled it off of the agenda this last week, which was rather shocking to the chair of the Health Committee, Gustavo Rivera, who is the sponsor for the New York Health Act in the State Senate. The State Senate now has a majority of co-sponsors for the New York Health Act. We are urgently trying to get this voted on in the Health Committee so that it can come out to the floor for a floor vote. So for any of you who would like to put some pressure on Ms. Stewart-Cousins to put this back on the agenda so they can vote on it tomorrow, please give her office a call. There have been hundreds of calls going into her office. It's unclear as to why she had pulled it off the agenda when this is the last health committee meeting of the year. In the 2017-2018 legislative session, when she was not Senate Majority Leader, she was a co-sponsor on this bill. So it's rather perplexing as to why, indeed, she pulled this off. So please contact her office and see if we can get this back onto the Health Committee agenda.
Thank you very much. I know Ms. Ruth Marr is here for a specific resolution. And Ms. Ruth, I will try and shuffle things around so that we can get to that and get to the resolution that the rest of the public has spoken to tonight. Are there any municipal officials?
Dobson
is here. Hi, Dobson. Welcome.
Hello. Good evening.
Evening.
What do I have to report? Our last council meeting was fairly big for us. We passed the green building policy, or more specifically, the Ithaca Energy Code supplement. I believe now the toughest set of new building green policies in the state of New York. You've heard about this many times now, but one of the changes we made over the past couple of months to move the timeline up by a few years. We made an historic and, you know, it's a big, finally, a deal with the community gardens for a 30-year lease by the Carpenter Park Project, which has been renamed, and I've already forgotten what the new name is, but we've long called it Carpenter Park by Green Star. And what else? Speaking of the New York Health Act, we passed a resolution in support of it. Yeah, and we spent a lot of money on, we approved a bunch of money on sewer repairs as well. I don't know if George, you can stop me if George mentioned this at the last meeting, but at the City Administration Committee, a committee meeting a few weeks ago, a government restructuring working group presented their findings and recommendations to council, which includes a recommendation that we adopt a structure a little closer to the county with a city manager. We would retain an elected mayor, but the duties would be reassigned. Like the county administrator, the city manager would, you know, run the day-to-day operations while the elected mayor would remain the chief legislative officer and spokesperson for the city of Ithaca. Apologies, I don't have notes like I usually do. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Thank you, Dustin. Questions? I have Deborah, then Dan.
Yeah, I just want to wish Doug a happy birthday.
Thank you.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Is Doug's birthday? And we are not singing for Doug?
Oh, I think that's our gift to him, Leslyn. We're not singing.
Okay. Our gift to you is not singing happy birthday to you, Doug. Well, happy birthday, Dustin.
Thank you.
Wow, you're spending your birthday talking to part of your birthday talking to us. Look at that. Dan Klein.
No better way.
I had the same comment as Deborah. Happy birthday.
All right.
Much
well, just feeling honored that you say no better way. Martha. Don't have to break out in song.
No. But sorry, I have a little more to ask than that. Happy birthday, Dustin. I was wondering, you did the city did pass the Community Justice Center.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. And I want to mention that several of us have met Luis Aguirre Torres, your wonderful chief sustainability officer. We talk about lighting the world on fire. He's great. He's been talking to us about a global compact. Now, Deborah, help me, Annie, remember the name of it. Just a climate compact or something.
We'll put the cake in there.
Has Common Council talked about this? He's brought to the CASE board and to the Energy Summit Planning Committee. So I'm curious about what councils.
He has not mentioned this to us. No, we haven't heard about that yet.
Okay. All right. Okay. Thanks very much.
And I agree. He is a rock star, and we're lucky to have him.
All right. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of your birthday.
Thanks very much.
Annie?
Thank you, Leslyn. I also just wanted to wish Duxon a happy birthday, but this is from my cat, Princess Buttercup, who is the one in the foreground there. So I know Duxon is a big lover of cats, so happy birthday.
Thank you very much. You're all too kind.
Well, look at that, Duxon. You come to the legislature meeting, you get happy birthday wishes from people, from Buttercup.
Info from Martha, no angry parking questions or anything. It's crazy.
But seriously, from all of us, happy birthday, and thank you for coming and presenting to us. Any other questions or comments, Duxon? Yeah. All right, take care. So I'm at Privilege of Four for legislators, and what I'd love to do is ask Amanda if you all will indulge me. We do have a member-filed resolution that I know one of our members of the public is waiting for, and I'm sure our legislature wouldn't mind if Amanda moves that resolution.
Yes, sure. I'd be happy to move resolution 10130, honoring Julie Kiefer and appreciating her contributions to Tompkins County.
I'd like to second that.
Unanimous second.
Yeah.
It's a unanimous second from all of us. Go ahead, Amanda. You want to read it?
Sure. I'm happy to read it. I just would say I appreciate a handful of folks, some of our colleagues here and some of our former legislative colleagues gave me a little information. I did not personally work with Julie, but so I really appreciated hearing what other folks had to say. And, yeah, I'm happy to read this.
Thank you.
Whereas Julie Kiefer served as a Tompkins County legislator from 1994 through 2017, serving District 10, the villages of Cayuga Heights and Lansing, after having previously served as a member of the Town of Ithaca Board and a trustee of the village of Cayuga Heights. And whereas Julie served as vice chair of the legislature for several years and chaired many county committees in her tenure, notably planning, consumer and community affairs, government operations, facilities and infrastructure, charter review, and legislative rules and procedures. And whereas Julie's copy editing skills were legendary, and for many years her day job was copy editor for the Ecological Society of America, and whereas legislators and staff learned to rely on Julie to perfect every resolution and set of minutes, asking, have they been Julie-ized? And trusting that a positive answer ensured that the document in question was perfect. And whereas, as chair of the County Ethics Advisory Board from 1997 through 2017, Julie was considered the conscience of the county because she insisted on the highest ethical standards with a quiet but iron fist. And whereas, active in the Tompkins County League of Women Voters, Julie was passionately dedicated to peace and social justice, believing firmly that government could solve problems and improve the lives of constituents, and she could always be counted on to vote for more public spending in order to fulfill that belief. And whereas As a fierce environmentalist in 1968, Julie assisted in the founding of a local community group, Citizens Committee to Save Cayuga Lake, to demonstrate concerns over the proposed NYSEG construction of the Bell Station nuclear power plant on property just north of Milliken Station, adjacent to Cayuga Lake. And whereas led by Dooley, the CCSCL's campaign undertaken prior to the first Earth Day, the existence of any formal environmental movement, and the creation of standard environmental review processes ultimately succeeded in persuading NYSEG to abandon the project. And whereas Dooley pushed Tompkins County government to always do more to fight climate change, so whenever someone said the county's climate goal was to reduce emissions by 80% by 2050, she would add at least 80%. And whereas Dooley also made personal choices to fight climate change, buying a Prius as soon as they were available and investing early in the Black Oak Wind Farm. And whereas Julie was part of the county's Solid Waste Management Advisory Committee, seeking to site a new landfill, serving an instrumental role in convincing the Board of Representatives, now the legislature, to not build a landfill since an aggressive recycling and waste reduction program was in the works. And was a longtime member of the Hillview Road Landfill Citizens Advisory Committee and the Central Processing Facility, now Recycling and Solid Waste Advisory Committee. And whereas in April 2021, the Water Resources Certificates of Appreciation for her decades of environmental service. And whereas Julie was an avid reader and serious intellectual and led her colleagues to think deeply about their own positions on issues before the legislature. And whereas while this legislature has done its best to write this resolution with grammatically precise language based on the county's plain language guide, which Julie helped create, and the Chicago Manual of Style, we leave room for Julie to edit any or all of this or ultimately vote no altogether. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Tompkins County Legislature honors Julie Kiefer for her thoughtful, selfless, and strong leadership, which has set a high standard of excellence for all who follow, and we express our deep gratitude for her decades of service to the people of Tompkins County.
Thank you so very much for reading that, Linda. Thank you. Legislators, before you speak, I held Ruth Marr's privilege of the floor moment for this resolution, and so if you'll indulge me, I'd invite Ruth to share her thoughts on the privilege of the floor for the public. Ms. Ruth?
Can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Thank you. I'm really pleased to be with you to have the opportunity to speak in support of this resolution. I couldn't say more than what the resolution already says. There's one part of her service that's been left out of this resolution, and that was that she was with me, one of the original founders of the Citizens Concerned with Medical Waste Incineration, and she served with me on the Cornell Community Waste Management Advisory Committee service, which took us, I think, about 10 years to complete, and which ended with an alternative to incineration for disposal of waste at the Cornell Veterinary Medicine College. So I'll just add that. Julie was very principled and operated out of a framework of firm ethical standards. She had very clear positions on things. And she served both as an advocate first, as you've mentioned, and as I've elaborated a little bit on, but also then took part in actual government by her service on the legislature and on all those committees. So those things are about Dooley are all well known. What's not so well known, and I thought I would just fill this out a little bit. So if you'll indulge me on this, what's not so well known is Dooley's other life. Dooley, as you also know, I think is quiet, humble, modest, and private. And so even though I've known Dooley for 50 years or more, I had to turn today to a friend, Mary Berkelman, while we were birding this morning to say, hey, can you offer a few tidbits on Dooley? And Mary beamed and offered first a few biographical facts that Dooley was born in the Hudson River Valley, near West Point, I think across the river from West Point, where she gained perhaps at a chapel at West Point an appreciation for the organ and for organ music. She later came to Ithaca as a Cornell undergraduate where she studied math and music. Dooley was an accomplished harpsichordist and has a harpsichord in her home. And she sang in various musical organizations at Cornell, both while she was a student and afterwards, among them the Savoyards, I understand, and the Cornell Chorale and other musical organizations. In addition, Dooley was a connoisseur of mushrooms. I don't know if you know that or not, but I called her. I knew it. One day I called her and said, hey, Dooley, you know, I've got these puffballs in my backyard. Maybe you'd like to come and see. So Dooley dutifully came and examined them. She was rather dismissive. She said, oh, they're past their prime. Otherwise, I might take one. But Mary had another story about mushrooms. And that is that she, Mary, had arrived at a League of Women Voters meeting with a few Morels. And Dooley was ecstatic. And he insisted that as soon as possible, they get in the car and drive to Dryden Lake and find more Morels. Another story about Dooley that Mary told me this morning was that Dooley, as an environmental advocate, was very distressed about the possibility of throwing poison into Yuba Lake in order to eradicate a population of lamprey eels. So she turned again to Mary and said, Mary, what can we do about this? They must be of some good. Can we eat them? So Mary went to her cookbooks and found that indeed you can cook and eat lamprey eels and some gourmet kind of cooking. So they did that and invited the press to come and sample the eels. And following that, there was a big splash in the Ithaca Journal, big coverage in the Ithaca Journal, and the Ithaca Journal was still a good, or was, not still, was at that time, a really good, decent paper for local news, lots of reporters. So the Ithaca Journal gave that very good coverage. So Julie is unique. She's a unique individual. We all know that. She's trained in music. She loved theater, concerts, the opera, mushrooms, and even the horses. She often went with Richard, her friend and partner for 30 years to Saratoga.
Yeah.
One, to see the horses, and two, for the concerts. So I just thought I'd fill in the portrait here a little bit. And thank you for your commendation of Dooley and her service. I can't think of anybody more deserving of praise. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Marr. Thank you for filling in those pieces. It painted a wonderful picture of the unique person that Dooley is. Other legislators, Deborah?
I have a follow-up to the lamprey eel story. My neighbor down the street, Suzanne Lorbeer, was involved in that effort. And apparently, yes, you can cook a lamprey eel, but skinning them is a real problem. Suzanne told me that at Dooley's and Mary's insistence, she was like nailing them to her garage wall and trying to pull the skin off of them. And apparently it was really difficult. So yeah, Dooley's a character. Ronnie and I had the privilege of having season tickets with her at the Ithaca College theater season. And she was always a lot of fun and a very discerning critic of their theatrical productions. And I'm sure we all sorely miss her.
Thank you, Deborah. All right. If there's no one else, let's take this to a vote. Honor our dear colleague and friend, Dooley. I'm sorry I didn't get an opportunity to go to races with her. but I do remember those conversations. Roll call.
Leslie Shill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Yes for me?
Mike.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Jaime Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Dan Corman?
Absolutely.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Ben Mori?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Delighted to say yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
All the way, yes.
14 eyes, 0.
Thank you all. Let's give Julie a cheer. Ms. Ruth, please let her know that we are so very proud to have served with her, and we appreciate her tremendously.
I'll give her the message. Will someone deliver the commendation to her?
We will definitely make sure that it gets to her.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Again, I'm going to do a little more shuffling here and ask Shauna to please take up Resolution M, and then I'll come back to Provision 4 for legislators. Shauna Black, Health and Human Services Committee Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move Resolution Number M, Support for a Single-Payer Approach to Controlling Healthcare Costs and ensuring everyone is covered, and urging the New York State Senate and Assembly to enact the New York Health Act, A-6058, S-5474, ID 10133. And I would encourage everyone to also look at the updated version that was passed in our Health and Human Services Committee meeting.
All right, so you're moving the updated version.
Yes.
May I have a second to that motion, please? Seconded by Deborah Dawson. Discussion. All right, let's go ahead, Shauna.
Yeah, I just wanted to introduce this. I was approached about a month ago by some concerned citizens that really would like to see the New York Health Act voted in this session. And we collaborated over the past few weeks I also had a Lansing High School student, Tyler Collins, who was part of writing this resolution, and I would like to thank him for all of his work on that. Interestingly enough, we've passed this resolution in this legislature, I believe, at least three times, perhaps five, over the past 15 years. And I ended up revamping much of Will Burbank's old resolution from about 5 years ago. So thank you, Will, and the many others in legislatures past that have written this resolution. I tried to keep a little bit from each resolution. And I would also like to thank Susan and Judy for helping me add some verbiage as well. They're really the true professionals here, sir. If there are any questions, I would definitely defer to them.
All right, thank you, Shauna.
Yep.
Rich John. Oh, Mike Sigler, did I see your hand up? Before I get Rich, I thought
Go ahead. Yeah, but if Rich could go first. I had a replacement resolution.
Okay. Yeah. Rich?
I'll let people talk first, and then I'll do something.
Yeah, I've gone back and forth on this. I'm going to support the resolution. But I do so with some reservations. I'm concerned about the impact on certain small businesses that haven't been able to afford the extra cost of health insurance, and particularly not-for-profit providers. I'm not sure how that will all work. I would far prefer if our national Congress could actually get its act together and make the amendments to the Affordable Care Act that had been contemplated when it was originally passed. You know, like other large legislation, it really requires tweaking. And because of the polarization in Washington, that hasn't happened. It would be far preferable if we could do this as a country. Failing that, I do understand the impetus to look at it at a state level. There's problems with that from the standpoint of having boundaries with other states that won't have this system, a similar system in place, and we will be economically competing with them. I still think that there's some rational reason in the balance that it makes sense to bet on this for New York. My last concern is if you look at the operation of New York State, they seem to struggle with the most basic ministerial actions. They cannot do these things in an efficient, clear, simple way for the people who live in New York State. You see it all over departments across the spectrum on the state level. I hate to say that, but that has been my experience. And entrusting them to pick up the ball and build something as necessary and elaborate as this, and to do it in a cost-effective way, as the resolution says it could be done, and I agree, I worry. So with all that said, I'm still going to vote for it, but I wanted to speak my piece on it. Thanks.
Thank you, Rich. Mike Sigler.
I'm going to move a replacement resolution for this resolution. I was told it would be seconded, not because they support it, just because that they want to give me a chance to talk about it. So
you are moving a substitute resolution?
Yeah, and I'll read it. Once it gets on the floor, I can read it to you, or part of it, or whatever you want.
Is there a second to that? Seconded by Shauna Black. Thank you. Discussion?
If I can explain. So, listen, as it was said, I mean, we've moved this five times before. Maybe things will be different this year because there's a supermajority. It was reminded to me that that just literally happened this session. But even before this, we had a pretty large majority of people who said they supported this. And we just haven't met with success on it. Like I said, maybe that will be different this year, but I was surprised that the Senate kind of went into committee and actually pulled this. I think that's – so I'll just read this quickly. Consider this approach. I mean, I'm hoping you'll consider it now. This is the approach I would take, but So whereas for 15 years, supporters of single-payer health care have versions of single-payer health care.
Mike, you're frozen.
Mike, do you want someone else to read it? The connection is poor.
It's still not good, Mike.
Whereas they've met with zero success. Video. How about now? The video, does that help at all?
Without the video, it's helping a little bit. You're still a little choppy, so give it a try.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
All right. Well, let's try. Whereas they've met with zero success on that front, despite having majorities of those claiming to support it in both the New York State Assembly and the Senate. Whereas we recognize there are challenges to implement such a large change and also recognize that in states where versions of single payer have passed, including California and Vermont, these programs have not been implemented because of cost. Whereas we know that without health care, thousands die when they can be saved, while still more are in pain and could be treated, freeing them of pain or at least mitigating that pain. Whereas we see the need for a new approach to this issue where we can arrive at more political and public buy-in. Whereas cancer is a disease that touches everyone and is also a disease we can quantify. We know approximately how many people are diagnosed with cancer every year and the cost to treat them. Whereas in 2020, there were 1,806,590 new cancer diagnoses and 606,530 cancer deaths in the United States. Every year, 110,000 New Yorkers are diagnosed with cancer. Whereas the cost of cancer nationally is near $150 billion, some estimates put the average cost of treatment at $100,000. Price estimate would put the cost of treating every cancer diagnosis in New York State at $11 billion. Still hear me or no?
You're fading in and out.
No? Yes.
Would you like me to read the rest of it? I can do my best Mike Sigler impersonation.
That would be great if you would. And if you can't hear me, I put it in the chat. So
we recognize that as a high cost.
Yeah. Okay, so whereas we recognize that is a high cost. Let me go back to the one before that because I was choppy. Whereas the cost of cancer care nationally is near $150 billion, some estimates put the average cost of treatment at $100,000. That price estimate would put the cost of treating every cancer diagnosis in New York State at $11 billion. And whereas we recognize that that is a high cost, but it is also a known cost that can be budgeted for. It is also a cost that the state can use to negotiate with health insurance companies to lower healthcare premiums. Since the state will take $11 billion of costs off New York health insurance books and giving them a known savings, plus the removal of instability of rising costs, that savings and the removal of the unknown should be reflected in reduced premiums. And whereas we understand there are other diseases that cause pain and death, we also understand that cancer is the largest, affecting the most people, so will have the broadest appeal. Once it is established, it's anticipated that New York State will look at covering other diseases. And whereas we recognize this
is a start at covering what's been a plague for centuries. We must start somewhere toward assuring New Yorkers that a cancer diagnosis is not a death sentence. Now, therefore, be it resolved that for these reasons, the Tompkins County Legislature calls on the New York State Assembly and Senate to put forward companion bills that would fully cover cancer treatment in the 2023 New York State budget. And that is the substitute resolution that's presented by Legislator Stigler. Moved and seconded. Discussion? Mike Lane.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for this. So certainly we all agree, I would certainly say, that cancer is a terrible scourge, and anything the state can do to aid families and people that don't have insurance, all the better. I am concerned, though, about the other diseases. And what about them? Cardiopulmonary diseases, birth defects, childhood diseases, odd diseases that maybe are hereditary, for example. I think the original resolution would speak to them better than this one. This might help sell cancer insurance, I suppose, but I think that we really should stay with what we had. I wouldn't mind having a second resolution at some point brought forward urging the state to put money into cancer research and care as a supplement. I think that would be fine. But I don't see this instead of.
Thank you, Mike. Go down my list, Shauna Black, Deb Dawson, and Martha Robertson.
Thank you very much. Mike Stigler, I definitely understand where you're going with this resolution. And trust me, I spent my day today at Memorial Sloan Kettering with my daughter and saw, 20 kids with cancer. And my heart goes out to every single one of them. So I think the thought is there. The problem that I have, as Mike Lane mentioned, is that there are a lot of things that are harming people, aside from cancer. We talked a little bit in that Health and Human Services meeting earlier about, the fact that in my specific situation, in many situations, the doctor doesn't actually know if it's cancer until they've done the surgery, until many treatments, until many medications have been rendered. And many times they pull out a tumor and it's not cancerous. And so I think right now that your resolution is well-intentioned, but I just don't, I don't think I could support it right now. Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Shauna. Deborah and Martha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike, your resolution is a very thoughtful and useful approach. And like Mike Lane, I wouldn't mind passing it at some point in addition to supporting single payer. Because cancer is a scourge. But so is the health insurance business model. I mean, I think that's the real problem here. I mean, the health insurance business model is to collect as much as it can in premiums and pay out as little as it can in benefits. And meanwhile, people are having to pay for things like administrative overhead and Byzantine, coding for unintelligible charges in hospitals and medical care and advertising, buy our insurance, don't buy the other guys. None of that has anything to do with the high cost that we're paying just to have health insurance. And while your solution would certainly address the scourge of cancer, it won't address the issues that have made health insurance coverage so unaffordable for many people. So for that reason, I will continue to vote for the original resolution that was passed by HHS, but like I said, I wouldn't mind voting for yours as well, but not as an alternative.
Thank you, Deborah. Martha.
Thank you. I just want to mention that the additions, and Shauna mentioned the revised that was passed at committee that references the human rights, our Human Rights Commission, and thanks to legislator Leslie for bringing that, for adding that in, because they specifically asked us to ask the state to pass the New York Health Act. This is, I would love to have partnership from the Republican Party in supporting improvements to the Affordable Care Act, which could be done very easily. I think things like offering a public option would make a big difference nationally. So in the meantime, I support this as something where New York State can be a leader and can be part of, we hope, maybe tipping the ball in that direction. Thanks.
All right. Mike, you have the word, you get the last word on it.
Thanks. Hopefully you'll be able to hear me. I don't know. Listen, I don't expect this to pass, but I am hoping that, listen, there's a reason it's not passing, or it hasn't so far. And granted, that may change this year. What Martha just said is important. Republican buy-in, right? You actually don't need it in New York State. You have a supermajority in both. Even if it were to pass at this point, and Cuomo said, no, I'm not doing it, you could override it. So if it doesn't pass in the next 3 years, I'm hoping you'll come back and say, you know what, we're going to take this half a loaf. We're going to start here, and then we'll see where we get. Because, I don't know, it seems to me that you pick the biggest thing that the most people are affected by, and you get them to buy into that, and that is a practical way forward. Not saying this other way isn't practical, it just hasn't worked. And if it hasn't worked, then I think maybe you try something else. Somebody had mentioned heart disease. Yes, heart disease actually is the number one killer, but there's so many other different causes of that. I'm talking about something you can quantify and you can put a number on it. And people worry about New York Health Care Act because people say it's going to save money and they save this, but we seem to forget that 85% of people in the state are insured and they seem to like their insurance. If we were to poll all our workers, no, if you were to poll, Deborah, all our workers, the healthcare consortium is pretty good. And what we're saying to them is we're going to replace that with some other thing that's unknown. And I'm not saying it's going to be worse. It perhaps could be better. But people generally are worried about that. And I don't think you can't take that into consideration. And that's kind of the political hurdle you have to get over. Whereas this other way forward, you're kind of eliminating some of that unknown, both budgetarily and just in, well, we're not taking your health insurance, we're going to do this other thing that's going to handle this one specific thing. So that's all I'm saying is, you know, keep an open mind to it maybe 3 years down the road. Thanks.
Certainly will, Mike, and I really appreciate you thinking outside the box on this one and bringing this to us, and would encourage to continue to keep it on the radar. Ms. Beckley, I do see you, but I didn't hear any questions. I know you were hanging out for questions, and so we're just going to take this one to a vote. So thank you for your patience with it. All right, let's vote on the substitute resolution.
Leslie Show?
No, not at this time.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
No.
Amanda Champion?
No.
Deborah Dawson?
No.
Henry Granison?
No.
Rich John?
No.
Dan Klein?
No.
Ann Corman?
No.
Mike Lane?
No.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
No.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
No.
We have 2 ayes, 12 noes.
All right, that fails. We're back to the main motion. We vote.
Leslie Show?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion? Yes. Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Dan Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie McBean-Claiborne?
Yes.
We have 12 ayes, 2 noes.
Okay, that passes. Thank you very much. And just as a reminder for our members of the public who spoke to us, we do want to contact Senate Majority Leader, Andrea Alistair Cousins, and others in the Assembly. And please encourage them to put this bill back on and to try to take action on it before they shut down. So thank you all, and thank you, members of the public, for coming and speaking to us about this and about raising it to our attention again. Thank you, Shauna. Okay. Let's move on to privilege of four for legislators. Shauna?
Thank you very much. A few weeks ago, I was asked by Kathy Cover, our legislative clerk, if I would like to present our chair, Leslie McBean-Claiborne, with her 20 years of service certificate.
Oh, you are silly.
From our county. Yes.
Wow.
Good job.
That was sneaky. That was real sneaky. Wow.
Sneaky. That's how we go. That's how we roll. I would like to say a few words on your behalf. I immediately said yes, and over the past week or so, I've tried to think of funny or embarrassing stories that I can tell from my dear friend Leslin. I'm sure we could all think about times we have spent with Leslin and chuckle a little bit. And despite this being a perfect time to tell one of those stories, I really plan on saving all of them for Leslin's last meeting in December. The one thing I would like to communicate to our dear Leslin is how grateful we are to have you on this legislature. 20 years is a very long time. When I started this job 4 years ago, I must admit, you scared me. I knew right away I did not want to get on your bad side. But it didn't take long for us to become colleagues, and now I consider you a dear friend. In fact, you were one of the first calls I made when my father passed away in October. The one thing I admire the most about you is your love for your community and the people that we serve. In every vote, every decision I've witnessed, I've seen you give full thought, hear both sides, and then always base your decision on what's best for the people who live here. The past 4 years of working together have been invaluable. Your leadership was exactly what our county needed entering into a global pandemic. You're a calming presence, and I'm glad that we have a good time while doing what we love. On behalf of the Tompkins County and this legislature, I want to thank you for your 20 years of service, commitment, dedication, and true representation. Thank you, Leslin.
Oh, that's really sweet. Thank you. Thank you. I hope there are people out in the parking lot with bottles of tequila and vacation certificates and anything else, lunches, dinners. I'll take it all. Thank you. My pleasure to serve. Ann Corman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, just speaking to you, I also want to congratulate you on your 20 years. I was not afraid of you as Shauna was. but I saw and have seen something so good and so pure is the word that's coming to mind, that you really care about people and you're very real. You see what's going on. You see who's not at the table, who things affect. And I asked to sit next to you, just hoping at the legislature. So I'm missing that. Well, of course you're chair now, so you're further away, but I asked to sit next to you, hoping a little bit of that would rub off on me. And so, and yes, we'll have more, more times, and I'll go get that bottle of tequila for you after this, after I'm done talking here. I also wanted to just remind people that the school board in Trumansburg, Trumansburg and also part of Enfield, if you're in the Trumansburg School District, the school board election and the budget is budget vote is still going on until 9 p.m. If you're in the Trumansburg area, excuse me, you can go vote at 39 South Street in Trumansburg at the Ulysses Historical Society. And I wanted to also say something to Jason, our administrator, since this is, I believe, our last meeting that we're going to be in together. And the main thing that I want to say is I'm going to miss you. I really am. And I want to thank you for all you've done for us. And the team you've put together and the way that you've worked with everybody, you've been an inspiration to me, your dedication, although I'm trying to learn more how to, you know, have that work-life balance, as I know you are doing too. But I just want you to know that you have made a big impression on me. I will never forget you. And you have helped save lives. I mean, not many people can say that, but you have helped save Tompkins County lives. And I hope you carry that with you and remember that forever. And I hope it's stories that you can tell your kids about, because they should be really proud of you. I also want to say I believe Livingston County is very fortunate to have you, and I really sincerely wish you and your family well in your next adventure. So thank you, Jason.
Thank you, Annie. Martha.
Thank you. Well, Annie, you really took both of the things I wanted to talk about, the school district and about our county administrator. So let me just say about the school district votes, all of the districts, elections are open. The polling places are open till 9 o'clock. The polling place is not always the same as where you usually go vote for president or Congress or whatever. So check the county, check your school district site for your election, if your polling place, if you don't know where it is. I've gotten involved in the Dryden School District election, school board election this year. And I'm just going to make a pitch for anybody in Dryden who's listening and hasn't already voted. Hope you'll vote for Bridget Flanagan and Justin St. Juliana. The issue of race relations has become, unfortunately, a political and contentious issue in the Dryden School Board election this year. You know, high school students came to the board and wanted to talk about having a Black Lives Matter rally, and they were shut down by the school board. They didn't want to hear about it. And four of the candidates on the ballot are actually on record saying that they think that racism is not a problem in the Dryden School District. So I've personally heard stories of parents who've actually taken their kids out of the Dryden District because their kids of color felt unsafe and unwelcome. So Bridget and Justin are the two candidates who really will change the climate.
I'm sorry, Martha. I don't know how other people feel, but I just feel uncomfortable with at a county legislator meeting talking about who we want to be on the school boards.
Well, I'm going to just finish, so people should go and vote till 9 o'clock, whoever you're in favor of. So I just wanted to say it's an issue that I think this county government has certainly been on record and taking aggressive actions to try to improve the climate within county government and within the county more largely. So that is that's one issue. The other is, yes, thank you. Huge thank you to Jason, and best of luck to you and your family in Western New York, back in Western New York. I hope that things work out. Hope you get your hostas moved back to the new house. I remember that when you first joined us actually at a NYSAC conference, kind of was your first day as county administrator. like at least half of us were at NYSAC, and you joined us there, and it was great to have a new sidekick, and we've done a lot together. We really, I think all of us and all the county staff deeply appreciate your service and your leadership. So I just can't thank you enough. And good luck.
Thank you. Mike Lane.
Two things. One, I was so glad we honored Julie Kiefer earlier. Julie and I joined the legislature at the same time. And just listening to that resolution read brought back a flood of memories over the years of dealing with Dooley. Dooley was committed to good government. She was interested in our charter. She was interested heavily in redistricting. She was a member of the League of Women Voters and brought forward good government issues constantly. And that's one of the things I'll always remember about Dooley. And I, too, want to say something about Jason. Jason, thank you for being our county administrator. When you first came on, I can remember you and I had a chat, and I said to you, this will be the hardest job you've ever done. And you kind of looked at me a little quizzically, and neither of us knew at that time we were going to have COVID. And I can't believe that that prediction wasn't true, whether we knew it or not at that time. I want to say thank you to your family, your children, and your wife for coming to our community and being a part of it. And I know it made it easier for you knowing that they were here and with you and were supportive of you, and for you to be concerned about your family constantly is perfectly, perfectly honorable, and we respect that and appreciate it in you. Thank you for all you did for our departments and our employees and moving our county forward. We are the best county. And you can always remember, Mike Lane always said Tompkins County was the best county, and I believe that. And I hope you'll remember the good times, and because we will certainly remember the good things about you.
Thank you, Mike. Very kind words. Martha, I'm laughing at what you put in the chat. Jason, what can I say? It has been an unbelievable pleasure working with you, getting to know you and working with you in my capacity as chair. You got a haircut. Like Mike said, during one of the most difficult times we faced as a body in this legislature, I learned so much from you. I'm supposed to be professional, so I shouldn't be saying things like tequila and cussing, not the least of which is using foul language, Jason, or teaching me how to. No, that's not true. That is so not true. But I really seriously respect the time working with you. And like Annie said, there's just some real simple words to me, and that is that I will miss you. Tompkins County will miss you. I know that I can say the staff will miss you in the short time that you've been here. You've done amazing work that has been seen. Mike Lane wouldn't use the words the crown jewel of the rest of the state, because that's reserved for driving. But I will say that Tompkins County is definitely the crown jewel. Within these last few years, a big part of it is attributed to your leadership and your work. Like Mike, I do want to echo the sentiments of thanking your family for loaning you out to us and all the times that we kept you here and engaged and not available to them. I really do truly want to thank them, because I know what it feels like. And I know several of our colleagues understand that as well.
So thank you for your time here. Thank you for everything you brought to the county. And doesn't matter where you go, no other county who gets you is going to shine like we do. So you can try, but I know it's not going to happen. But seriously, Jason, thanks. I'll be looking forward to celebrating you with staff and with legislators and with community members. I can't believe this will be your last meeting with us. Like, it's not supposed to happen this way, but it is. Shall we get to that all important report by the county administrator?
Thank you. Thank you very much. And, you know, I would just like to thank this legislature for empowering me and trusting me and appointing me to be the leader of the organization over the past more than 3 years. It's been a very rewarding experience, and I've enjoyed every moment of it. It's been extremely challenging. I have a lot of people to thank, but I have a lot to thank for this legislature for trusting me to do this job. And I've appreciated it. My family, I want to thank my wife and just my children for supporting me through all the difficult times, particularly this last year. And I'll just share a quick story with you, and then we can get to your favorite presentation that you have loved every other week for the past 14 months. You know, when this is all happening with COVID at the end of February and early March, I remember coming home and explaining to my wife that what was going to happen. We didn't really know exactly what was going to happen, but we knew the state was going to shut down in a matter of days. We knew that this was going to be something we'd never experienced before, and I just didn't know what it meant for us. We didn't know what it meant for the kids. There's a lot of unanswered questions. And my wife looked at me and she said, do what you got to do. I got the kids here at home. You take care of business, and we'll figure it out as we go through it. My wife, Anna, she knew that this job and these types of jobs sometimes have unpredictable things that happen when you fill this role, you have to respond to. And she was always extraordinarily supported through all this. We have, as you know, we have 4 children, 3 young children, 6, 8, and 10, and managing a homeschooling with all 3 of them. I had to upgrade my internet. It kept shutting down. They were all doing it all the time. And it just so much appreciation to my wife, Anna, for all that she did, and understanding that difficult role. That said, I wasn't alone in that. I had dozens of people around me, whether it was the Emergency Operations Center, and some of them are watching now, whether it was staff in different departments whose others said the same thing to them. Do what you need to do. Be there to support the community. It's your job as a public servant. I understand, and I'm here to support you. And I've said that at the 2 or 25-year anniversary dinners that I go to. It's honoring those employees that have worked for us for 25 years, but it's honoring those significant others, those domestic partners, those spouses that are there supporting us through this work, through the thick and the thin, as public servants. And, that's the hardest thing for me to step away from is the great people that we have working in this organization, the people I've been fortunate enough to be around, the leaders in the organization that I've worked closely with, particularly after the past 14 years. They're remarkable individuals. They're wonderful leaders. They're compassionate. They're empathetic. And it's really been a privilege and honor. I feel so fortunate to have this opportunity. So thank you. And thanks to them for trusting me and having the confidence in me to be their leader. I'll never forget it. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And yes, I will take my hostas with me. And Leslin, they may have been afraid of you, and I still am at times, so that's okay.
I'm sorry?
I said they some of them might have been afraid of you, and I still am at times. It keeps me in check, and it's okay.
I just tell it like it is.
I know you do. I know you do. I know you do. Shall we start with your favorite presentation?
Of course.
This is my last one.
No!
And, you know, I've enjoyed this. I say this every time. This is the chronological history of what's going on in this county. It's remarkable. And I've just, you all can see the COVID-19 presentation?
Yep.
All right. It's a great history, and I'm hopeful that this will be one of your last, because we are starting to see, I mean, I've said this before, I'll say it again, you have the lowest infection rate of any county in New York State. You have the highest vaccination rate, despite what people say about Hamilton County. And you have over a million COVID tests, probably approaching, you know, closer to 1.2, 1.3 million at the end of the day. Something that's more than some states have accomplished. That's more than some countries have accomplished. And it's remarkable that this county, a small county, relatively small county, has accomplished this. So I'm hopeful that you will not have this presentation too many more weeks into the year. I'm hoping this is one of the last ones. A lot of activity. Positive cases are starting to drop off in terms of new ones. Active cases are starting to drop off, which is a good sign. Hospitalizations are down. Thankfully, we have had no deaths over the past time we've talked about this. And again, first doses and total doses continue to go up, which is great news. A series of executive orders. I would say that the changes that we're experiencing now are happening so fast with respect to guidance, it mimics what we went through last March in terms of the new guidance that comes out all the time. So we are trying to do the best we can to keep up with that so we can give guidance, have a lot of, you know, the whole CDC guidance on mask wearing, as you can imagine, put a whole new spin on everything and confusion. So we're trying to sift through that and to try to give guidance to our departments about what are we going to do for our staff? What are we going to do for the public? So more to follow with that. I know the team is working actively on it, and a lot of success with pop-up clinics, a lot of success as we're starting to now work with school districts to work on the 12 to 15 school-age children, get them vaccinated, and continue to move forward with what I would call a huge success in getting Tompkins County residents and community vaccinated much quicker than really any of our surrounding counties and really most counties in the state of New York, which is great to see, and the country for that matter. This again is something you're familiar with. We're starting with the amount of hours. You know, this doesn't go down in terms of regular hours work, the cost of the hours. We do have the FFCRA leave, which we think is going to continue to decline in terms of use as folks start getting back to in-office work. Schools obviously are open. The prevalence of the disease is limited in the community. One thing we have identified, as we go through this, we're going to continue to identify what can be FEMA, what can be reimbursed through FEMA. One thing we did realize is that the AARP funding, for COVID-related expenses is really, forward-thinking from March 3rd of 21 moving forward, not retroactive, but really prospective. So we're working that into trying to understand the American Recovery Plan, funding and how that can fit into reimbursing for COVID and vaccination expenses. But, you know, it's been a heavy lift. Something that, again, this down here, Cayuga Medical Center, huge with respect to testing, huge on your commitment to community testing earlier on in the fall, and the vaccination effort. It's a great partnership. I've said this before. Some of you that were at the 50,000 celebration that we had with the commissioner from OGS, you know, I don't think anybody would want to go through another pandemic. I know I don't, but if I ever had to, this is the team I would want to go through it with. From the staff and the organization to Cayuga Health Systems to our higher ed partners, to our community partners, the reason we've had success is because of that collaborative effort. And it's just it's a great group of people that were committed and had the single mission in mind, without themselves at the center of it, but the center of the community at the core of their mission. And it's really, it speaks with results, and there just isn't anybody that can compete with it. And it's really an honor to everyone that's been able to work on this. So to your point about saving lives, all of those people are the ones that contributed to saving lives in this community. I'm going to turn this over to Frank to talk about the active cases and some of the numbers.
Thanks, Jason. Before I jump into the data, I did want to touch a little bit on what Jason mentioned about the EOC beginning our strategy for wind down. We're likely in the coming days to move virtual, so that will end our physical presence together here at Duer. We will still be acting as an EOC, but doing it virtually from our offices and meeting as necessary as we move forward. There's still quite a bit of work to be done, particularly around vaccination over the next month or so. But ultimately, after we've provided vaccines to the children and finished our pop-ups out in the rural parts of the county, vaccine provision will start to be winding down as it's become more widely available, particularly with pharmacies and physicians. Here in the near future. So we're not out of this. There's still a pandemic occurring. There's still a lot of work that needs to be done and attention that needs to be paid. But we do feel like based on our disease numbers and our continued vaccination rates, we are in a position where we can transition to a more virtual EOC as we continue to put together our strategy for the future. So just wanted you all to be aware of that. So moving on to the data, we'll go through these quickly. Disease prevalence, below 50 active cases, things are still heading in a positive direction. I've had a couple of blips over the last few days. We've had a couple of clusters, one related to a residential facility, the other a religious institution. So we're going to see those things. And it's important for folks to know that zero is not really realistic. It is our goal, and we obviously want to have as few cases as possible, but zero isn't likely to happen very frequently. So we're going to ebb and flow, and that's okay. We'll keep doing the work to control the spread when we find cases, and hopefully that keeps the illness and mortality low. Disease prevalence still very, very low. Obviously, a lot of this has to do with the volume of testing that we're doing, but our disease numbers per 100,000 are still the lowest in the state as well. So numbers still all heading in the right direction. Source of exposure, we haven't shown this in a while, but we thought it was an opportunity to kind of follow up. You can see in this most recent little bit of an uptake, we know the sources because we do have a couple of clusters that are accounting for most of the cases. But generally, things are trending together. You can see those spikes back in December, January, and February, where we had known sources were very high because we were dealing with clusters then as well. So I thought it was just interesting to see how this has progressed over time. But things are generally heading in a good direction. These are our vaccinations. So as you would imagine, first doses have slowed down, and second doses are catching up, which is good news. That means folks are fully vaccinated, and that coupled with the Johnson & Johnson one dose, this demonstrates the progress that continues to be made with over 56,000 people fully vaccinated. There's been a lot of focus over the last week or so after the announcement that Pfizer had been given emergency use authorization for children 12 and older. So we had already been doing planning in preparation for this. We had ordered vaccine in preparation for it. A couple of really good things have happened as far as volume. One of our local pediatric offices, Northeast Peds, was able to get a bolus of Pfizer, and they were able to fill up all of their appointments for that, as well as this Saturday we just filled the last appointments for 800 children or people over 12 to be vaccinated Saturday at the mall. So that's going to put a really significant dent in that population for our community. And now we are planning to go out to the school districts as well. Tomorrow we'll be in Dryden. Thursday we'll be in Newfield. And then next week we'll be doing 2 days for Ithaca City School District to address the two different cohorts that they're working through. We have also been asked by Groton and Trumansburg to provide clinics there. depending on how next week goes with Ithaca City School District, we'll either be adding next week or we'll be doing ground instruments for the calendar.
And I'll take over here, although Frank, feel free to chime in. CDC mask guidance continues to shift some of our things. It was announced May 17th and effective May 19th for New York State to follow that guidance. This is talking about vaccinated individuals and no longer needing masks or physical distance in most of the settings. The reason that we're covering this is also because we are operating a business, and so we'll talk more about what we're starting to do with that. You can see here private businesses may still require masks for within their establishments, and we're starting to see a lot of different businesses coming out with what their practices are. The big piece, too, is unvaccinated people should still wear a mask in all of the settings and while around others. So while the guidance is shifted for those who are vaccinated, it is not shifted for unvaccinated, and then there's some carve-outs, things like healthcare settings, pre-K through 12, public transit, and other places where even those who are fully vaccinated will need to continue to wear masks. And this is where we are as an organization, as we start talking about staff returning back to their office spaces. Hopefully if they've been working remotely, they've continued to work, but we're talking about how we bring them back safely. Really putting those guiding principles that we exist to serve the public and we're committed to that high quality service wherever we're serving the public. And so how do we balance both serving the public and retaining our employees and our workforce? And so that's kind of the basis for what we're doing, ensuring that we are putting the public and our employees and their health at the forefront of all of our planning. Last week, we met with our departments to talk about their operations plans and creating a framework of how to do that, looking at using our telework policies and flexible work arrangements to think about how some of the lessons we've learned about work from home and working in other places can be used. At the same time, acknowledging we need to be serving our clients, so how do we serve them in the best way possible? We've also found different practices there that may work better for some people, things like telemedicine or phone and calls, things like that that we should be looking at. The other piece to this is with the CDC guidance being adopted by New York State around masking, we are taking some time to figure out exactly what that means for us as an organization. And a piece of that is also looking at vaccination status. So things about, you know, how do we ask our employees about vaccination status and what guidance can we give to department heads as we start to look at this. The final piece to all of this is right now we are holding with all of the recommendations we've had about masking. We're asking our employees to continue to wear masks if they cannot distance or may come into contact with others. And we are asking the public as they enter our facilities to continue to wear masks for the time being until we establish whatever the new procedures and kind of the next level of all of this will look like. And I think Frank hit on that in the beginning, talking about the EOC. While the pandemic is still here, we're starting to phase out a variety of things, and how do we handle that responsibly? And that's where we're at this point.
Okay. I think that's all we have for this, unless there's any questions.
Yes, Mike Lane.
Amy Hendricks, thanks for that report on our employees. When do you expect to have the county issue the guidance on these various things that you want to investigate right along? Vaccination status, et cetera. How long do you think it'll take to come up with our position on those?
So we have a team that's been working on this for the last several days. I'm thinking that it'll probably be next week when we'll start making those recommendations and how we'll move practices. One of the challenges, which all of you know, is with 27 different departments, there is no one perfect approach for all of the ways that we do service. And so there will be some broad recommendations, and then there will be departmental specific recommendations, and Dominic will help us communicating that with all of the public as they enter our facilities. And then we'll also work with our employees on that. So it'll be some time to get it all out, but I'm anticipating probably within the next week we'll have really the first take at all of this. As you all know, we have issued several directives that have had revisions throughout the entire pandemic, and I am guessing that as we revise those directives to now meet this new guidance, there will be additional revisions to all of those as we learn and look at this full return to work.
That sounds very reasonable. Thank you.
Thank you. Leslie and then Martha.
Thank you, Leslie. A quick question for Frank. I may have missed it on the slide. I just wanted to clarify. When we're having the clinics with the schools, which I think is fantastic, very excited about that, is it just for 12 to 15-year-olds, or will 16, 17, 18-year-olds that are at the school also be included in that opportunity?
It's 12 and up, so anyone over 12 years of age, including adults. The only limitation on that is Ithaca City School District, we're actually doing during the school day, so it would be limited to students or adults that are allowed to be in the school during those time frames. But both Dryden and Newfield are outside of school time, so it's for anyone in the community 12 years or older.
Thank you.
Thank you. Martha.
Thank you. Really, what a lot of achievement expressed in all of those slides. I'd like to ask about farm workers and how that initiative is going. And also, with the, you know, everybody feeling like things are, like, really getting to an end point, maybe, I'm a little nervous about visitors this summer. And, you know, we have a lot. I think our community has done an amazing job of wearing masks and continuing to wear them. You know, I was downtown yesterday and everybody had masks on, even on the sidewalk. As we get more visitors over the summer, you know, maybe I'm wondering if there's a communication effort with the tourism hosts, the kind of tourism venues, about where to go if you need a test while you're visiting here, or, you know, come to Ithaca and get vaccinated or something. I guess I'm asking, so update on the farm workers. And then do you have any thoughts about special challenges or opportunities when it comes to out-of-town visitors?
Sure. So for the farm workers, we've been working with community partners, particularly Finger Lakes Health Center, who traditionally serves those populations for their other health needs. And they've done a really good job of reaching and vaccinating our farm worker population. So we feel like those have been predominantly covered. We didn't get to everybody, and we continue to work with our partners to see if there's other opportunities to reach those folks. But I think so far we've done a pretty good job collectively in reaching them. As far as the tourism and folks coming to the region, we have talked with the local tourism groups, and, you know, really what we've asked them to communicate as they're, you know, encouraging or advertising the region, you know, as a visiting location, is that when folks get here, you know, please pay attention to what our local guidance is and follow it. You know, it's really important. We've made significant strides here, and we want them to come and be a part of our community, but we need them to be a responsible part of it. And they've been very receptive to that to date. You know, I think we have to start preparing for the new normal. We've obviously vaccinated large numbers of people here, but I think the honest truth is that we're not going to get to herd immunity as a country. I think we can just accept that now, and we have to prepare for what that means. It means for each of us individually to be responsible for ourselves and our community and get vaccinated. But as others are not, you know, we just have to continue to follow good public health guidance beyond the new stuff. Just the covering your cough, staying home when you're sick, washing your hands. You remember the stuff we started with? That's really what's going to end up carrying the day as we move back to being as close to normal as we used to be. So we'll continue to communicate about it. Certainly as new people come into the community, we want to make sure they're aware. And then we're going to have to deal with the fall as well, right? If the disease cycles as it did last year, you know, we should expect we might see some additional cases in the fall more than we see in the summer. And we'll just have to be prepared for that and make sure that we're able to take care of the people that do get sick. But we'll continue to work with our tourism partners and try to get as much messaging out as we can.
Thank you, Frank.
Annie, then Henry, and I have a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to say to Jason that the slideshow for me has been very helpful, so thank you for doing this and for whoever else has contributed to this, the slideshow, because sometimes it's kind of scary or not sure where we're going, what to expect next for me. And then just to see where we've gone, you know, we've been through this, you know, and we can get through the next step. So it's been very helpful for me. I wanted to ask if you're going to be putting your own book out on your handling of the pandemic, or if you wanted to go in on the one that I'm doing, or Frank. So you need time to think about it?
I've got a few offers from publishers. We're working on some things. We need someone to do the illustration and diorama, so if you're up for hire, then we might have a relationship to talk about later.
Yeah, I can do the diorama for the book. That'd be great. So I wanted to thank the folks that did the Enfield pop-up for the general public. I heard that went really well. I heard that actually ran out of vaccine. And I know you'll do another one at some point there. I'm wondering how the Trumansburg pop-up clinic for vaccination.
The best one of all, Annie. Best one. No one did better.
I heard there were 30 people signed up.
Yeah, it's Jason's last meeting, so we'll let him be delusional.
Okay.
we actually did 51 folks at the Trumansburg, so we had almost 23 walk-ins there, wow, which was great. At least eight of which were folks that got turned away at Enfield. So we were really glad that we were able to get those folks. So yeah, it went well. We did 51 folks, and about half of them were walk-ins.
Excellent. That's really good to know. And Jason, thanks for living in the best district in the county too.
Oh, no question.
We have best and crown jewels, and what else next? It'll be the Mecca next. Henry.
Yes, thank you for the report. I was wondering, Frank, you mentioned that we're not going to hit herd immunity as a country. How much vaccine fatigue are we having now in the county?
Are you asking how much vaccine we have on hand?
How much vaccine fatigue? Is it getting difficult to get people to develop? Well, how much vaccine fatigue do we have?
Yeah, sorry, I didn't hear you, Henry. Thanks. I don't know. There's certainly some. Quite frankly, once we're done with the kids, we're going to be at 75% of our population, right? So, you know, we're pretty close to hitting that herd immunity 80% goal that we started out with here. And I'd imagine over the next few months, as, you know, more and more people get vaccinated, we will ultimately hit that number. So it's hard to say locally, you know, what exactly is driving that last group of folks. We're assuming there's a lot of different things, and we're trying to address all of them in the hesitancy realm. As far as the rest of the region, state, and country, you know, I think you can watch the news and understand why we are where we are. It's unfortunate that we've gotten to this point, and quite frankly, it's going to make us harder for us to, you know, kind of adapt to the COVID being part of our disease panel in our community without having that herd immunity there. Because everything we do, all of our public health work, is based off of our ability to ultimately get to herd immunity and then move from there. So we're going to have to adapt and adjust, and We'll see what goes. But I think as far as our county, I think we ultimately will hit it here, and we're going to keep working until we do.
And the last question, we should probably not really answer, but has there been any research into whether we need a booster shot in the vaccine?
Yeah, it's still too early to know. They're obviously doing the science now. I think Shauna might have asked me this question at HHS, and it may end up feeling like it, one day we don't know, and then the next day we're telling people to get vaccinated again. And I just want to prepare folks that that doesn't mean that the science just happens overnight. It'll happen. It's happening right now. They're doing research on the original clinical trial individuals. They will continue to follow them. They'll also be testing others that have gotten vaccinated to see how long the vaccine lasts. And at some point, the science will tell us it's X amount of time. And then it will feel like we switch our messaging to, okay, now it's time to get a third vaccine or a second if you got the single shot dose. So I want folks to be aware that the science is going on right now, and it will evolve over the next month. And then ultimately there will be a decision that's made, and then we'll start telling folks, you know, you need to get vaccinated after this time frame again, assuming we do.
Thank you.
Deborah.
Thank you, Leslin. A follow-up question for Frank on Henry's question. If it appears that we're going to have to get boosters and they can't be delivered orally, do you anticipate that the shots will be given in large public clinics the way these initial vaccinations have been, or do you think that pharmacies and doctors will take that over?
It'll probably be a mix of both, Deborah. We'll plan for the first. We've already had conversations with CHS that if we need to do mass vaccination clinics, they're prepared to be a partner with us for that. But I think particularly because supply is what slowed us down initially, and supply really isn't a problem at this point and likely wouldn't be for a booster, that the private sector would be better prepared to administer those. So using family physicians, private physicians, and pharmacies is the more likely route. But we'll prepare for both and be ready to go. I said this way back in the beginning, at least here in the EOC, it sounds great to have the private sector do this because they do have the infrastructure to provide large amounts of anything to a lot of people, but they're not good at rationing. Right? That's really not what they do. And so when there's a shortage of supply, it makes it very challenging for them to make the types of decisions and infrastructure shifts that are necessary. And that's really where government plays a role. So it will depend on vaccine supply and really how this evolves over time. But we're preparing for both.
Thank you.
Shauna, and then let's wrap this one up. Go ahead, Shauna.
I have a quick one. I just wanted to know if there's been any conversation about combining the COVID vaccine with the flu shot.
Yeah, so a lot of that is going to depend on likely evolution with variants, right? And, the flu shot, we're already making our best guess on the top three or four variants of that. I'm not sure. I'm not a vaccine expert, so I'm not sure what the possibility of adding, two or three variants of potential COVID vaccine into that happens. I would imagine that we'll be offering both together, right? So if you're going for your flu shot, even if it's not a single dose, we'd be offering both. Obviously, there'll be a lot of planning that goes into that, but I'm sorry, I don't know the science about how they actually make the vaccines and whether that's feasible or not to combine them.
Great. Thank you.
So I have a comment and two quick questions, I hope. Just like Martha was saying, just really, the community concern about the, lifting the mask mandates and trusting that folks who are not vaccinated will wear their masks. We already know that there's been a lot of people who refuse to wear masks, period. And so this is probably a question for Dom, Dominic. So I'm just wondering if the top-notch communications team has some PR around encouraging mask wearing for folks who, you know, are not vaccinated. And, you know, how do we reach those folks so that they are practicing these safety measures to keep the rest of us safe as well?
Thanks. Yeah, we're actively looking at that. We're looking at changing majority of our signage, which we just went through a remap not too long ago, but we'll do it again on some of that. That's been really effective throughout the pandemic. We're also just waiting for a few more pieces of guidance to get clarified from New York State on businesses, and then we'll communicate with them as well on how they might have people wearing masks in their facility. But I do think it'll be a balance between getting people vaccinated and explaining all the benefits, you know, and reentering our society, and that folks get with getting vaccinated, to sort of encourage that as well. So I think it'll be a balance. We're waiting on a few things: preparing the website, new signs, and another public campaign. Clarifying will be our approach.
Thank you. And for anyone there, are there still some hard to reach populations in terms of getting vaccinated who we aren't connecting with? And are there things that we can be doing to help?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are hard to reach folks in every population that we have, and that's kind of the group of people that we're coming up against as we're, you know, reaching the 75 and 80% mark. What I've been telling folks is that what I think the single best way to help us reach that last, you know, 10 to 20% are personal conversations, right? Talking with our family, our friends, our close circles, the people we interact with, and talking to them about why we got vaccinated, why it was important to us to protect ourselves and our family and our community, and really trying to help, you know, assuage their fears and answer their questions the best we can. As much as Dom is amazing, I think we're getting to being past the point where me or him or Jason or even you all in a public meeting saying, please go get vaccinated. It's those personal connections and personal conversations that are really going to have the impact. So I would encourage everyone that's been vaccinated to talk to their family, their friends, you know, and encourage them and answer their questions and tell them why it was important to you.
There aren't any single populations that we should really be targeting as far as you know.
Yeah, I don't think so, Leslyn. I think looking across the demographics of who we've vaccinated, I think we've reached those populations proportionally. And, it, you know, we're going to keep trying to get to hard-to-reach populations, there's no doubt, because we need some extra effort there. But I don't know if there's a single one that I can point out as being a particular concern.
Thank you. My last question is, you know, at one point there was a lot of scare and worry about all the variants, and just watching the news with what's going on in India, and they're talking about this is a new variant that even is even more even deadlier. And so I'm just wondering, you know, in our county, have we seen sort of a minimizing of the variants, the UK variant, the South African variants? At one point, we were pretty heightened about that. Where are we now?
Yeah, so the shift has occurred where variants are now predominant. Cornell has been doing a research project, and since the beginning of 2021 now, 90% of our positive cases have been of a variant. Of those 90%, about 50% of them are the B117, otherwise known as the UK variant, and about 40% of them are the B1256, which is the New York City variant, and then there's a mixture in that last 10% of some of the other variants. So the variants are predominant both here and around the country, and it really just emphasizes the need for vaccination. While we want to keep people healthy and safe individually, it's even as important to limit the ability of the disease to spread, to limit these variants from developing, and to, just as you described, some that are more virulent that might not be susceptible to the vaccine and or could have more significant morbidity and mortality rates. So it just emphasizes the need to get as many people vaccinated as possible.
Indeed. Thank you.
Okay.
Martha. You have another comment or question?
Jason was about to say something.
No, I have something else. So two other things to update on it if after we're done with this presentation. So if there are any questions, happy to take them.
Okay, I'm just going to ask about another town hall. Or you've been doing office hours that are more interactive, right? I wonder if you know this whole kerfuffle about the mask guidance, people might be interested in having, you know, that kind of interactive communication as you did earlier in the whole episode. Just a suggestion.
Sure.
Yeah, I think as things wind down a bit, clarifying what that looks like to the community is going to be important, setting the tone for what they can expect moving forward. I will say we had two office hours today, one in Spanish in the noon hour and one that's going on right now. That's quite successful for young people and parents and caregivers.
That's awesome. That's just great. Thanks.
Thank you. I know I did share the ones for today. Thank you. Jason, did you say you have something else to update us on? Are we done with the COVID report? And
yeah, I just have one thing on this and then just another update unrelated. And I want to take a moment, if I can, indulge me. So there's five people on the screen that I want to just acknowledge. And our county staff has been remarkable, and they work incredible hours and incredible commitment. But these four, five people, you've got Amy, you've got Frank, you've got Jay, you've got Dom, and you've got Lisa here. They have been here throughout all of it. There is probably not one day over the past 14 months I've not talked to these folks. They've worked relentless hours. They don't get paid, a minute over 40 hours a week, and they've worked thousands of hours to help lead, to help manage, to do what was necessary. And I just want to take this opportunity to thank all five of them. If it wasn't for them, you know, personally and professionally, I don't think I would have been successful. And I can tell you that this county would not have been as successful as it is. And frankly, I think we owe a lot to these five folks for their commitment. And I want to take this opportunity to thank them for everything they've done for this community and for this organization. So thank you. Thank you, Amy, Lisa, Frank, Dom, and Jay. We appreciate it.
Thank you for that, Jason. On behalf of this legislature, we share those exact sentiments. So thank you.
I have one more thing to update you on. As you all know, I have been called many things in my career. Some good, some bad, and as of recent, I've been called a trailblazer. A trailblazer by our partner, the New York State Association of Counties, because of my innovative, creative, and somewhat genius thought. And that recently we had an issue that no one has been able to solve for 4 years. I don't want to call it genius, but it's a little bit below that. And that no one has been able to figure out the reconciliation numbers for EFMAP funding for 4 years. And an idea sprung upon me one night in the middle of my sleep, well, lack of sleep. And it said, why don't we foil the information? And I believe it was NYSAC that said, no, it was a colleague that said I was a trailblazer for foiling it. Wouldn't you believe that today the FOIL request was answered and the DOH gave us our reconciliation numbers?
Woo-hoo! They gave us the money or just...
They gave us the money, but they gave us the numbers. So I forwarded it. I just wanted to let you... I forwarded on to NYSAC and to Tom Merton over in DSS to see if this was real. And to ask that question of now what do we do, that we finally know the numbers, but it doesn't mean the check's in the mail. But
$3.25.
Yeah, it was something, I don't know what it was, $3.5 million or something over 4 or 5 years. So I wanted to let you know, we just got it sometime this afternoon. I'll send it to everyone. I forwarded it to Ryan and Dave Lucas over at NYSAC to see what they say about it. But interesting that we got this information, and
just want to share with y'all. That's all.
Is that statewide or just for Tompkins County?
That's just for us. So, first county in the state to ever get this information. So I'll send it out to the listserv to all of our administrators and folks and see where we go from there.
Yes, there we go. Go ahead, Martha.
And how much was it again?
I didn't add it up, actually. I was just so excited to get it. I think it was around $3.5 million. So, like I said, I'll forward you all the information. I don't know what it means if we get it, when we get it, but it was pretty good.
Make sure you let Assemblywoman Kellis know, because she was going after this through the comptroller's office, too.
I will do that as well. I'll forward you.
Fantastic.
Terrific.
You're supposed to get up and start, you know, juggling a basketball or something, man.
That's funny. But a simple thing like a polar request.
Awesome work. Thank you. Thank you so very much. Anything else from you, Jason?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
All right. Let's get county attorney and then our finance director before we take a break. County Attorney Jonathan Wood, anything from you?
I do not have a report.
Thank you. Thank you. Hope you're recovering well. Rick Snyder, Finance Director.
Oh, I do have a report. First, I'd like to start by saying that after a long search and interviews and a prolonged period of time, we have placed our payroll specialist position.
Yes.
That candidate will start amongst our staff here on June 14th.
Fantastic.
My second item is what I'm going to share the screen with to share with you our April sales tax. Do you have that on the screen right now? Thank you. We have a good report this month, and I wanted to present to you both the graph and the stats so you can see that the tax distributions for April was up 6.51% compared to last year. So as you can see, that we're really having a remarkable month in the month of April. Now, I know that the bar was set pretty low because April was like our worst April last year. So, but that does show some good recovery there. And if you move over to the far right-hand side of the spreadsheet, in this section here, you can see the year-to-date figures. The year-to-date figure has gone up from 10.9 million to 11.5 million, which represents a year-to-date increase of 5.45%. That's equivalent to about $597,000 more year over year than we were last year. At the bottom of the spreadsheet, I like to show how we are doing relative to budget. And if we're looking at the gross sales tax budget, we should be for 4 months through the year, we should be, of course, at 33.3%, and we're at 33.4% of budget. Wow. We're nailing it. We're hitting it pretty square right now for this point of the year. The graph I've changed from last time now includes 2019. The green bar that's relatively straight going across the midsection, that represents our annualized budget spread evenly over 12 months. So the green line is our 2021 month by month, January through December. The new line on here is the purple one, and you can see that that was probably our best year, and we're way above what we would consider normal with this new 2019 data starting the graph. The second line is the blue line, which is probably our worst year in a long time, and that's the 2020 sales tax month per month. As you can see, it generally fell pretty poorly below even this year's budget, which this year's budget was lower than last year's budget. And then the red line, which we only have 4 months shown on here, that shows pretty rough start here, but the last 2 months are way up, and we're over budget, and it's remarkably good to be coming in 5.45%. And that's all I have. I'll take some questions if you have any.
Yeah, Rick,
I have Rich and then Deborah.
Sorry.
Rick, thanks for this. I had suggested last month if we could get a column added for 2019.
Yes.
Because the 2020 numbers really are so wacko, it doesn't give us any sense of where we're coming from.
Didn't I have a chance to update that with the 2019 numbers in there? Would you like 2019 numbers just for the month on this left-hand side, or do you want it year-to-date also?
Whatever you think is appropriate, but it would give us a far better context, I think, to understand what's actually happening. Thanks.
What I would like to share, and this doesn't show up on your copy, but off here to the right, I have all the 19 figures here and the 20 figures and the 21 figures. That doesn't show up on the copy that I emailed you last night, but I can rework this so those columns will show up so you can see each of the 3 years. Would that be enough information for you, Rich?
That'd be great. I don't want to burden you, Rick, but I think it would give a far better picture to us.
Because I think that way you can see 2019 compared to 2020 compared to 2020.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Okay.
All right. Deborah?
Yes, thanks, Leslin. And thank you, Rick. A couple of questions. Are these April figures really April, or is that the lag of 1 month between March and when the state
reports? They're really the month of March, and they're the taxes that are paid by the companies in the month of April, which are presented to us in the month of May. We have always called it the April sales tax, but it is actually, for the most part, March figures. They have a very convoluted formula for different proceeds from different organizations across the state. I have heard, and this isn't official, but this particular distribution this month included a lot of adjustments from COVID, a lot of adjustments from New York City, a lot of internet adjustments. A lot of adjustments were made back in March, just 1 month prior. We thought the first quarter looked pretty good, and they told us that included a lot of adjustments. But this most recent spike, we have to be a little bit cautious because they forewarned us that this would include quite a few adjustments from previous periods. I don't know how far going back.
Okay, and then one last question. The that lousy first couple of months, does that reflect the diversions for the distressed hospital fund and the AIM payments?
Actually, no. We had diversions this month was the big month for being hit, and the diversion we got hit with was I don't have the data here right in front of me. I could probably find it here in a minute, but it was an AIM deduction and a hospital deduction all took place in this month, what we're calling April. So had it not been for that, it would even be higher.
Okay. That's good news. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Any other questions, sir, Rick? Don't see any more questions.
Jason, you were going to jump in with a comment.
I did. Rick, Kevin and I had done some graphs, some bar graphs, I think to what Rich is asking for with some comparatives. We did some cumulative and some month-to-month. So we can have Kevin plug it into you and share it with everyone as well. I think it's what you're asking for, Rich. I think a lot of you are asking her to show comparatively to 19 and even 18, both on a month-to-month but then also on a cumulative basis so you can kind of see how it's tracking. So we can get behind the scenes, Rick, and we can get together and figure out what may be a good optics on a graph.
Very good.
Sounds good. Is there anything else from you, Rick?
That is all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for the good news. Congrats on the hire. All right. Why don't we take a quick break?
until 7:45, and then we'll come back and go. Is there, wait, any staff waiting for any other resolutions so we can take care of before we take this break? Is Ruby waiting?
Yeah, I think Ruby is.
Indiana, Indiana too.
Frank might be waiting as well.
Let Frank wait.
Oh. So why don't we take care of the ones that Ruby and Deanna are waiting for, and then hopefully they're quick. And then we can take a break. So let's go to you, Deborah. Budget.
All right. Thank you, Leslyn. I'm just making sure I've got the right resolution.
Resolution K.
Yeah. I just wanted to alert everybody that we're voting on the one that was actually passed by the committee and not on the one that was originally in your packet. Brittany sent the correct one yesterday. So it's Resolution K, appropriation from contingent fund and creation of position, employee benefits assistant, Department of Human Resources, ID number 10104. And I move that.
Seconded by Mike Lane. Comments, questions?
Yeah, if people have questions, Ruby's probably the best person to answer them. But as I understand it, we have a benefits person who is somewhat burdened by an ongoing health problem, and we really need some help in that area.
No questions. I'm sorry. Mike Lane?
Well, I would just say that I think it's critical that we do this now rather than to wait until budget season to do that later on, simply because it is budget, and we need this help to make sure that we have the good advice that we need throughout our important budget season.
Thank you. All right. Let's take it to a vote.
Leslie Shaw?
Yes.
Mike Figler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Linda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Randy Granison?
Yes.
Sean?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Clairborn?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
All right, that carries unanimously. I think the one Deanna is waiting for might incur a little more conversation. She's waiting for the one on public safety. So maybe we should just take a quick break and we'll come back.
About the consent agenda?
The ones on consent agenda that folks are waiting for? All right. Well, we take up the consent agenda as well. So the consent agenda, I'll say quickly, are resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committee. Do I have some appointments for consent? Okay. All right, I'll read through. I'll read through the resolutions. On the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution A, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution, a resolution of 2021, adding 13.6 acres of land in the town of Ithaca to Tompkins County Agricultural District 2, ID, thank you, ID number 10075, Resolution B, adding 13.6 acres of land in the town of Ithaca to Tompkins County Ag District 2, ID 10078. That's a companion to the neg deck that was a Resolution A. Resolution C, making a negative determination of environmental significance in relation to resolution number something of 2021, adding 1.35 acres of land in the town of Danby to Tompkins County Ag District 2, ID 10076, and the companion is resolution D, adding 1.35 acres of land in the town of Danby to Tompkins County Agricultural District 2, ID 10079. Under Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Resolution E, recognizing Tompkins County Correction Officers Association as bargaining agent, ID 10103. Resolution F, authorizing a public hearing on proposed local law blank of 2021, a local law overriding tax levy limit for 2022, ID 10096. Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution G, Budget Adjustment, Community Health 4016, ID 10122. Resolution H, reappropriation of funding received in 2019 and 2020 to the 2021 budget for the Learning Resource Grant from the Kresge Foundation Public Health Department, ID 10121. Resolution I, authorization to amend project budget, State Septic System Replacement Fund Program, ID 10102. And on the Government Operations Committee, Resolution J, resolution to update the Administrative Policy Manual, Policy 017, Interns, Work Study, Students, and Volunteers, and Policy 03-18, Unemployment Insurance, ID 10093. That's the consent agenda. May I have somebody move it? Oh, sorry. Appointments. The consent agenda. To the Substance Abuse Subcommittee, Ronald Harris Warwick, community member, term expires 12/31/22, and Molly Murphy, community member, term expires 12/31/24. And to the Mental Health Subcommittee, Dr. Joseph Strayhorn, community member, term expires 12/31/2024. May I have someone move the consent agenda? Dan Klein moves. May I have a second? Leslie Shill seconds. All in favor of the consent agenda, roll call vote.
Leslie Shill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison? Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McGowan?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Claiborne?
Yes.
Is that Henry saying yes?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
That carries unanimously. Thank you very much. It is 7:42. We take an 8-minute break and be back at 7:50 and continue our meeting. So we're adjourning for a break. We're taking a break. All right. Welcome back, everyone. Please let me know that you're here so that we can resume. We have a quorum. I see Deborah. I see Mike. I see Dan. I see Shauna. I see Henry. I do believe we have... All right. Let's power through the rest of our agenda so that we can go vote for those of us who haven't voted yet. Thank you for your patience. Moving on to the standing and special committee reports. Did I miss anything?
Resolutions.
Are there any resolutions to be added or withdrawn from the agenda? Yes, Deborah.
The Budget, Capital, and Personnel and GO committees met jointly this afternoon and will be adding a resolution appropriation from contingent fund and creation of positions, budget director and budget analyst, Department of County Administration, and the resolution ID number is 10135.
Does it need to be added? The title is on the agenda.
It is?
Yes.
Resolution Q.
Oh, okay. Thanks, guys. It's been a long day. This is my fifth meeting. Sorry.
No worries at all. Thank you.
Okay, so let's move on to standing and special committee reports, starting with Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee and Foreman Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have not met since last legislative meeting, but we are meeting this coming Monday, the 24th at 1:30. And on our agenda so far is the several items from the Department of Recycling and Materials Management, environmental product procurement for county government. So there'll be an update on that. Also, updates on the styrofoam ban in New York State and the reusable bag distribution, which we are doing at the county. And also there'll be a last minute addition. It's not on the agenda, but we just got notified today that the Department of Recycling and Materials Management want to add a resolution, which is support for New York State Legislature to establish an extended producer responsibility system for packaging and printed paper. And our EMC Environmental Management Council is going to be giving their yearly report and update. And then there is a member filed resolution supporting the New York State Assembly and Senate bills that are establishing a moratorium on the operation of cryptocurrency mining centers. And that's all I have. Deborah, did I miss anything?
No, ma'am, you did not.
And that's all I have, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions, Green? Dan?
Yes, last month, last legislature meeting, you pulled the forest resolution to inspect the committee, but I don't see it on the agenda. I was just wondering if you could say something about that.
If you want to bring that up at the committee meeting, we can talk about it.
Thank you.
Okay. Mike Sikker.
Hi, Amy. I don't know if you know this, but I'll ask you anyway. The crypto mining ban or moratorium, would that be on just new crypto mining or would that be on existing that, and is there any kind of idea of scale? Like if you're a large mining operation, small operation, that kind of thing.
Right now, what the bill is asking for is, I have a cat trying to climb on my computer, it's doing a couple of things. It's actually also asking for environmental impact statement to be done on any new data centers that are going to be doing this or cryptocurrency mining centers. And then as far as ones that are currently doing this, then as their licensures or permits expire, then they would not renew those if this moratorium goes into effect.
Okay, thank you.
What? Thank you, Ann. Budget Capital and Personnel Committee, we have Boston Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met a week ago yesterday. I guess the highlight of our meeting was the presentation from Bill Talbot from TC3, just kind of outlining where they are with their operating budget going forward and discussing some of the changes they're considering making. And they've invited our legislature and the Cortland County legislature to become involved at this stage, in the planning stage, to let them know what changes we might like to see as they go through this process. I think Bill Talbot sent everyone a copy of the slides from that presentation. If you didn't get them, let me know, and I will forward them to you. The other thing we did is, of course, pass the resolution for the new benefits, employee benefits specialist. And now, Leslyn, do you want me to offer this resolution that the joint meeting passed today, or do you want to wait till GO
takes it up.
Well, you certainly can. It's between you and Amanda, whoever wants to arm wrestle for it.
I don't care.
Go for it.
I didn't think you would. Yeah, so, I want to offer a resolution queue from contingent fund and creation of position, budget director and budget analyst, Department of County Administration, and that's ID number 10135. And I move that.
I have a second, please. Second by Martha Robertson. Discussion.
I think everyone knows, as a result of our executive session and discussion since then, that we're losing our current budget guru, whose title is not budget director, but titles are deceiving. In any event, he will be leaving us in mid-July, and Jason advised us that given what a heavy lift our very large and complex budget is, we really need two people to handle it. And he had been planning on proposing the addition of a budget analyst and the change in our current budget guru's position title to budget director. He was going to make that recommendation in connection with our budget hearings this year for 2022. But given the imminent departure of the current occupant of that position, we want to get these people on board as soon as possible so they can learn from our incumbent before he leaves.
Okay.
Jason, let me know.
Thank you. Roll call vote.
Leslie Scheel?
Yes.
Mike Singler?
Yes.
Sean Glass?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison? Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
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 14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. That passes unanimously. Anything else?
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Deborah. Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Granison.
Yeah, she's not met since the last legislative meeting, but we are planning Juneteenth week, and it's going to be very exciting. So, look forward to Juneteenth week, starting on, I think, June
14th. All right. More information to come. Thank you, Henry. Housing and Economic Development Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Thanks very much, Leslyn. We have not met since the last legislature meeting. We do meet Thursday, May 27th at 9:30, and we'll be doing a pretty packed agenda. We're going to be hearing from the Convention and Visitors Bureau with and perhaps even a recovery strategy from STPB. IAED will be presenting their economic recovery strategy. We'll also be hearing from some folks working with Finger Lakes Reuse, but it's a collaborative. It's called the Pathways Project for, let me see. All right, I don't have the exact title here, but it will be. We were going to hear about broadband, but we'll have that report at the June meeting. So that's it. Next Thursday is the, and we'll be probably talking about the American Recovery Plan Act money as well. So that's next Thursday.
Thank you, Martha. Questions, Martha? Downtown Facilities Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We met on May 13th. Other than passing the minutes, the rest of the meeting was an executive session, and the information from that will be moved forward to the rest of the legislature and executive session this evening. So that's my report.
And you're sticking to it. Thank you.
Yes, I am.
Dave. Public Safety Committee, Rich Doncher.
Thank you, Leslie. Public Safety will be meeting this Thursday at 3 o'clock, and I anticipate we are going to get a further report on the Community Justice Center plan and the overall timeline in general for moving forward on a lot of the all of the recommendations that we passed back in the end of March on reimagining public safety. I do have one resolution, Resolution L9999A, a resolution establishing the Community Justice Center in collaboration between Tompkins County and the City of Ithaca, and I would move it.
May I have a second, please? Seconded by Sean Black. Discussion?
If I might, I would just introduce the resolution by saying this is our really big first substantive step after passing the plan with setting up the Community Justice Center as the interface between the city and the county with responsibility to not oversee or manage, but to coordinate and to help track all of the different steps we'll be taking and to do measurements and to help with reporting back out. We have committed money from contingent fund to do this. I do want to give assurance to everybody on the legislature that we are receiving continual updates on what the CJC will look like. I anticipate on Thursday we're going to have draft job descriptions and some more discussion about the structure of the center and perhaps the advisory board or committee that will work with it and the collaboration with the city. But it's all moving forward, and this is really our first step on the promise we made back in March. So I'm pretty excited that the resolution has come before us.
Right. And this is one that we had pulled out from the list of recommendations, and we'll address it separately at that time. Any questions, comments? Good work. Excited about getting this moving, Leslie.
I just want to say on behalf of District 2 how important this is to city residents as one of the county legislators representing residents and neighborhoods. This has been something that I know that many constituents in District 2 as well as in our broader city have been very interested in, have successfully advocated for, have been strong local voices in support of advancing the reimagining and the portfolio opportunities that are coming. And so this is very exciting to be the first one off. And I think it's a great first step. Thank you all for your work on this.
Thank you very much for that. All right, let's take this to a vote.
Leslie Shue?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich Jen?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Link?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
Leslie McBean Clairborn?
Yes.
12 ayes, 2 noes.
Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Deanna, for your continued work. And working with the city on this, and we look forward to hearing the report at Public Safety. Anything else, Rich?
I'm glad you brought that up. I did want to say that staff has really dug into this, and just for the public's benefit, the amount of work that this is going to take is substantial, and this is a long-term commitment with a real need to be careful in the planning and the execution. And I appreciate all the work staff has undertaken to this point and what they're going to have to do as we move along. Other than that, I just did want to report our jail numbers. We are at 35 inmates, I believe, or no, 32 today, but with 3 board outs. So our numbers have come down a little bit. Like to see them come down a little bit more, but we're doing okay.
Thank you, and thank you, Rich, for acknowledging the staff. I do want to be a little more expand a little bit more and just thank Deanna for her leadership and experience that she brings in working through this, because, you know, we say we're going to do it, and then it's like, who's going to do it? And so really do appreciate the time and effort that she's putting in working with Shelly Michelle Nunn at the city and others to try to continue to move this very important thing forward. So thank you. All right, Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
Thank you. We met yesterday and spent quite a bit of time talking about the resolution that we passed this evening on the New York Health Act. We also were given a presentation by Frank Krupa on gun violence and it being seen as a public health crisis. Let's see here. What else did we do? I think that's really that took up the majority of the conversation. We did get updates from department heads. I think that's it. Our next meeting will be next month.
Thank you. Questions for Shauna, Martha?
Thank you, Leslin. Thank you, Shauna. I don't want to put whole resolution G off the consent agenda, but and I don't want to make Frank stick around. But this one's about the reimbursements, like I said, federal or state money, New York State Department of Health, reimbursements for contact tracing case investigation on COVID. Can we at some point get an accounting of the total reimbursements or what percentage reimbursements? And on this particular one, was this reimbursement, what time period was included? Do you know that?
That was actually answered in committee. If Frank is here, he does have the answers for that.
He left, but we can get it for you.
All right, thanks. It'd be great to know kind of where we are with all those expenses.
Yeah, we did ask that, Martha, and he did answer it. So you could also, if you want to look up the answer tonight, you can watch the HHS on YouTube.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you much, Lee. Is that it, Shauna?
That is. Thank you.
All right. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
This committee has not met since the last legislature meeting. We will meet this Thursday at 9 o'clock. Two things we'll be talking about will be the airport and the use of the three tranches of money from the stimulus packages for operations and or capital. And the other thing we'll be talking about is beginning our discussion on the reimbursement of municipalities for Bridge New York, bridges that may be built by the towns or villages. And that is preliminary at this point. We'll begin the discussion, and hopefully we'll continue at the next couple of meetings and end up with a policy.
Thank you, Mike. Questions, Shauna?
Yes, I just had a question for Mike. I know that I believe we've received 3 or 4 emails in regards to people being upset about the restaurants in the airport. And I wanted to see if you had any updates from that. And I noticed, too, that the emails did not have a return address. And so I don't know if it's one person that's sending all of those or if they're multiple people. But the concern was that people are flying in and out of Ithaca Airport, and there's supposed to be a restaurant there, and it has been closed since COVID.
That's certainly true, and we want to get the restaurants going back again. Shauna, I don't remember seeing those emails. I don't know if anybody else saw them, but I don't think they came to me. But I can understand people's concern, and I can tell you that Mike Hall is concerned about that, and we'll probably be talking about that on Thursday when he reports about the operations issues at the airport.
That sounds good. Thank you.
Yeah, I know Kathy forwarded the email.
If they were forwarded today, I haven't had a chance to review them.
Yeah.
But I will look at them. Thank you.
Look at them. Thank you. Tom Kinney, Intergovernmental Relations Committee, Martha Robertson, Chair.
Henry's got a hand up.
Oh, thank you. Henry.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay, yeah, Mike, yeah, the email was forwarded. One email about the F1 said that it was a phone out parent. I'm not sure what the meaning was that was, but again, I received the three emails today to forward to Mike Gassi.
Thank you, Henry. I'll take a look at them. I understand they just got forwarded today.
Okay.
Yep, okay.
Thank you. Martha, Tiger Committee.
Okay, thank you very much. We met, our last meeting was May 11th. We had, as usual, we had Charlie Krasansky and Diane Miller from Cornell with us. We spent a good deal of time talking about redistricting, the state redistricting process. And there was kind of a consensus that we wanted to pass a resolution, which I'll draft for the next meeting, asking for the state to, in whatever the process it is, and we understand it's kind of in flux, to prioritize putting Tompkins County in all in one district for state senate as well as a congressional district. And with a second ask being a preference to kind of be attached to Cortland County. Based on commuter information that I got from Fernando de Aragon, it's clear that we have the most connection back in both directions with our commuters with Cortland County compared to any other county. So that plus sharing TC3 and sharing the focus on being a higher education community where they have SUNY. There was some logic to hoping to be attached to Cortland County in future redistricting efforts. That's also we share the assembly district with Cortland County. So that'll be coming up next time. We did hear from Jason about raise the age and that there's some work to do on establishing the right, some policy on asking the state to relook at raise the age and the implications a few years in that they have a real gap in terms of the beds in much of the state, beds for 16 and 17 year olds as required in the law. So that will probably be coming in the next couple of months. And then we did pass two resolutions that are in your packet related to public safety. These also were initiatives requested out of your goals that came out of the Reimagining Public Safety Initiative. And if there are no questions, I would go ahead and move those.
Any questions, Martha? I am going to, Martha, before you go, I'm going to have to take a quick break for myself. And so I'm going to turn the meeting over to Vice Chair Shauna Black. I will be back.
Thank you, Leslie. Resolution and document 10113, resolution calling for a statutory amendment to Article 75 of the New York State Civil Service Law to address misconduct by police officers. And I so move.
I second.
Johnny, you're muted.
Sorry about that. Seconded by Deborah Dawson. Are there any questions? For Martha.
I have a question.
Yes, Mike.
There are two resolutions, right?
Yep.
Yes.
Right. And I want to thank Jason and Jonathan Wood for both pitching in and putting this language together.
Great. Any other questions for Martha? Okay, I see none. Let's do a roll call.
Leslie Shum?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
No.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Lynn Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
No.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Bertha Robertson?
Yes.
We have 11 ayes, 2 noes.
Thank you very much, Kathy. And Martha, would you like to move your next resolution?
So the next one is Resolution O, Document 10112, resolution calling for New York State civil service reforms to provide for the hiring of police officers that better represent the communities they serve. I so move.
Can I have a second, please? Seconded by Leslie Schill.
And this, again, thanks to, very much to Jason and Jonathan for the language here. And I would mention that right around the time that Tiger was meeting, we heard from...
Hey, Henry, can you mute for us?
We heard from NYSAC that they have an initiative that actually is even more inclusive, has more items in it, that they're working with the Sheriff's Association and New York Civil Service. They're developing legislation around it. So, you know, it wasn't an official public document yet. It's not legislation yet, but this is really timely when we get this off to the committee chairs in Albany and our delegation. I'm hoping it'll kind of resonate with what's already being done that NYSAC is doing with the state association. So, you know, maybe this will actually, you know, produce something this time. Hoping so.
Thank you, Martha. Rich John?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that, again, these resolutions are part of what was included in the plan we passed in March. And moving forward on them is part of what we contemplated when we passed that resolution. So this is, again, an effort to make our promise real. So I support. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Mike Sigler, question, comment?
Not really a question or comment, just that I said this in committee, and I'll say it again. I'm going to vote for this, but I don't think this should apply just to police officers. I understand that, you know, we're applying it to police officers because we have to start someplace, but there's really no reason that this civil service reform shouldn't apply to everybody. I mean, it would seem to me that we want unbiased hiring throughout our workforce, not just policing. So, I don't know. I just wouldn't single out police officers. So anyway, what I think on it. Thanks.
I couldn't agree more, but we've tried that and it went zero, nowhere. This is a start and we can hope it's a precedent. So, you know,
and yet we still try for New York Health.
Oh, I think that this is one where we've got NYSAC, the Sheriff's Association, and even civil service working on it. So I'm really hopeful that it's the first step.
Thank you. We have Deborah and then Rich John.
Yeah, I hate to repeat what I said in committee, but the reason that we're focusing on police officers with this particular resolution is because we committed to do that when we passed the Reimagining Public Safety resolution. So there you go.
Rich John?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, Mike, I agree with you. If, you know, we can work towards a broader reform of civil service in New York State, I think that'd be a really good thing. But the focused approach right here on these resolutions I support as well. Thanks.
Great. Any other questions?
Yeah, in fact, we have passed resolutions calling for more general civil service reform. So not that long ago.
Okay. Thanks, Martha. Okay, let's do a roll call.
Leslie Schill?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Fireport.
Okay, thanks, Martha. Let's move on to Government Operations Committee. Chair Amanda Champion.
Thank you. Government Operations met a week ago, week and a half ago. I lose track these days. We had a good long meeting. Jay Franklin from Assessment gave us a very thorough report about property tax exemptions and kind of talked us through all of that. It was very, very good. Folks had some good questions. If you have questions about that, go back and watch the first part of the GAO meeting. We talked about, for at length, we talked about the idea and the options for the legislature returning to having our meetings in chambers. Obviously, there was lots of opinions and good discussion about that. The staff, Jason, Frank, Dominic, lots of people gave us some really great information, things that maybe folks didn't know. I think the general consensus from legislators was that we'd really like to figure out some kind of hybrid model. But Jason pointed out, you know, the question really is, do we want to have a short-term hybrid model for to get us through the rest of this year, or do we want to really come up with a whole new plan for how we broadcast meetings? So there were no decisions made. It was just a discussion. But some of the staff are going to get together and talk a bit more about what it would look like and bring us back some more information next month. We also had a good discussion about our local redistricting process, which is outlined in our county charter. If you haven't read that section, you can go into the charter, and it really spells out what we need to do, which basically is put together an independent redistricting commission made up of local folks. It would not include any elected officials. So the sort of next step for that is that we need to get a job description and get the information out to the public and start finding people who want to serve on this commission. And I've talked to Kathy briefly recently about how, you know, the next step for that, and we're going to talk about that more at the next GO meeting as well. I think that's about it. We did go over one more time the last chunk of the rules of the legislature, and I do have one resolution for that.
Okay, would you like to move that, Amanda?
Yes. Resolution P, amending the rules of the legislature, rules 13 through 18, ID 10072.
Okay. Is there someone that would like to second that? Seconded by Rich John. And would you like to give us some commentary?
Yeah, just, you know, this did come up. I feel like we talked about this once already at the full legislature, and we did take it back to make a few more changes. The track changes version is in your packet. We added just a couple of things about special committees of the legislature, and kind of moved a couple of things around, I think. But that was the main final change. And I'm happy to answer questions if there are questions.
Are there any questions for Amanda? Okay, I see no hands, Amanda. Let's vote on this resolution.
Leslie Hsu?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Lynn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Amanda? Amanda, I actually had one.
So if the executive order is not extended for us to have meetings via internet, would that change the conversation completely?
It certainly would, and that is something that we need to consider. I feel like, and Jason can jump in, but I feel like there's sort of a sense that that's not going to happen right away. It's not going to happen like suddenly. But Jason, I don't.
Sure, I think that's a good question that will. I don't think it'll happen right away, but who knows? I think the bigger question is going to be what you want production-wise and what the expectation is longer term. So let's say, for example, remote meeting option goes away completely, and you want to have your regular committees.
Jason, you muted yourself.
That was a good move on my part. I've only done this a few times. Thank you. Is that if you want to have committee meetings, you know, recorded and broadcast like it has been, that's a production question, right? If you want your regular meetings to go back to the similar type of model it was before, that's a production question. So, and that kind of opens up, you know, windows and doors and opportunities. So I think that has to be part of this, not just the immediate need, but, what is the production expectation, that you want longer term for your broadcast? So for example, if you continue to broadcast it on cable, which can be challenging in addition to your YouTube channel, what's the benefit and, you know, how do you want to do that? So those production questions are, I think, are bigger, both equipment and staffing questions.
Great. Thank you. Are there any other questions for Amanda? Okay, I see no other hands. Thank you, Amanda. And let's see here. We've already voted on Resolution Q. We have also already voted on the individual member filed resolution. It's time for the minutes of the previous meeting, May 4th, 2021. If I can have someone move it, moved by Rich John, seconded by Deborah Dawson. And if we can, are there any questions or comments? I see none. If we could do a roll call, please.
Leslie Scheel?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you very much. Now is the time that we would like to go into executive session for the purpose of real estate negotiations. If I could have a mover, please. Moved by Deborah, seconded by Leslie Scheel. And a roll call, please. We will not be making action coming out of this meeting, coming out of executive session.
What's the purpose, Shauna, did you say?
Yeah, I did say, for the for the purpose of real estate negotiations.
Okay, thank you.
Leslie Scheel?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Ann Foreman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Dave McKenna?
Yes.
Glenn Morey?
Yes.
Martha Robertson?
Yes.
13 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Let's take a few minutes to go off air.
Donna and Jason, would you like me to stay for this?
You don't need to, Rick.
Okay. Y'all have a good night.
Bye, Rick. Thank you.